This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.
First of all, toda to you, Mish, to have me here to share my personal story, my perspective about the Ethiopian Jew in Israel. Every time I meet people, I have a combination of two feelings. One is I'm really excited to be here and share what I know and what I feel and what I think. And another one is it's a heavy feeling because before I came here, before I got to place that I should to speak about the community, like I go through the whole process and think about the situation, and my feeling's not really good. So this is my feeling right now, but in the few minutes I will be like fine with you, with your energy. I want to, first of all, I want to tell a little bit about myself, not just because I love myself, but also I think through my story I can speak about others, and it's kind of a typical story I have. My name is Shula Mola. I used to be Nanu Tafera in Ethiopia, and I arrived to Israel in 1984, when I was 12 years old, with my mother and two younger brothers. Other family, like my father and other family, they didn't want to come because it was too risky, and people, like smart people, understood that the journey, the way to go to Jerusalem through the desert of Sudan, Ethiopia and Sudan, it's not good. And I can tell, at the end of that journey, I'm speaking about the journey starting late 90s, 76 until 85, we lost about 4,000 Ethiopian Jews on the journey, most of them in Sudan because of the conditions. So some people, especially my grandfather, and also somehow my father, they said, no, it's not good. I would say, like, in the, not in the, like, side stories, my father and my mother were have bad time, and for my mother it was good opportunity just to say, okay, we divorce and I go. So it's happened. It's happened because he didn't want to come. It's also for her, it was good. Okay, this is a good time to divorce him. Okay, we'll finish it. Anyway, we walked more than 1 month from Ethiopia to Sudan. We just read the Parashat Shavua Lech Lecha. Every time we read this Parashat Shavua, I say, that's just the same thing. I mean, people didn't really know exactly where they go. They had in their mind, in their life, like their heart, Jerusalem, even not Israel, just Jerusalem. Actually, Jerusalem with the temple. As a little girl, in my mind was Jerusalem with the temple. It was a strong thing that we kept. I kept as a girl. Okay, the Seder, it's hard. Yeah, it's really hard. After my estimation is probably 2 weeks of walking, no enough food, and I had no any more of my shoes, but I continue running. Bemet, running to where? Running to Jerusalem. To Jerusalem with the temple. I think this is like when I speak about Lech Lecha, it's about emunah. If you like believe something, if you believe that where you go, there is something big, something bigger than you, I think. Otherwise, I cannot really explain how kids survive. I already said a lot of them didn't, but some of them survived, and it's not natural to survive Sudan. And when we got to Israel, after like a month of walking and another four months of being in Sudan, in different refugee camps in Sudan, with hiding our identity, we couldn't say what is our plan. We couldn't say that we are going to Jerusalem, because as you know, I guess, Sudan is an Arab country, like Israel and the Arab countries, not really friends. So, and we were told to say, we are here for a while. We are here because at that time, it was a civil war in Ethiopia. We are here because there is civil war, and Mengistu, the authority of Ethiopia, was really bad person. And we are here just for a while. And it was a story, but we are there because we want to go to Jerusalem. And as a girl, I didn't know the difference between Jerusalem and Sudan. For me, it was like we walk, okay? And we know. I knew that we should walk. And after a while, we get to Jerusalem with the temple. And then we get to Sudan. Okay, so what now? It was really bad situation, but people, like adult people, my family and others, continue telling the story of Jerusalem. They will come to take us. Who's they? Nobody come. Who's they? And we stay for long. And the groups who got to Sudan, even earlier, they spend year and 2 years, nobody come. No, we still were told, they will come. They will come. They will come, the people from Jerusalem. Our brothers will come to take us. And this is also something that you think about that and you believe that, yeah? Even though you are hungry, I were hungry, we all were hungry. Even though you are sick and you see your part of family finish their life, okay, we'll be there. This is very difficult part to go back and remember and to share. I put focus on this because I want to kind of show you the gap between what we expected to find, the gap between our thoughts about things should be in Jerusalem, and the actually thing we just found in Jerusalem. When we got here, it was a big problem. I think this, I can speak about different problems. There are really various problems, but the real problem for us is the question about our Judaism. Because we kept Judaism for thousands of years in Ethiopia, in different period of time, some of the period times really bad, but we kept it, and we kept, shalom. You know, you can take my chair. And then, probably can move to here.
Okay, I tried to bring in. Okay. Yeah, I think we should bring a few more chairs.
Can
how many chairs
shall we bring?
Bring it with four.
Yeah.
Four.
You know what? Let's do this. שלום לנו, בסדר? הכל טוב? I want to share. And when we got here, the Orthodox establishment, the Rabbanut, Orthodox rabbis, as you know, they have very strong power. So they have the position and the responsibility to decide about the Jewishness, who is Jews, who is not. And this aspect, they decide. There were a lot of discussion around this, and I have to kind of to tell there is difference between Ashkenaz rabbis and the Sephardic rabbis. Ashkenaz rabbis told, like, for 100%, this paper is not Jewish, so they don't really ask them. But if we would ask them, they will say, don't come, okay? But we are here and say, okay, we are not accepting them as a Jews. If they want, they can, I guess they will say, probably, they can to go to convert. And the Sephardic rabbis, the head of this establishment was Ovadia Yosef, Rav Ovadia Yosef, and he actually based on rabbinic psika, earlier psika from that recognized the Beta Israel. Our name in Ethiopia was Beta Israel. Beta Israel is part of Shvatim Avudim, the lost tribes. And he decided, and that psika, yes, and Rav Ovadia Yosef, based on that psika, and he said, yes, they can join to the Jewish people as a Jews. And he was a big, fighting between these two establishments, and in the end he also added a circle safek.
In order to remove any doubt,
they will do symbolic conversion.
Conversion.
Thank you. That's why I didn't want you to record me.
You're great.
It was in the end it was the decision, but it was very, very not just insulting moment. It's more than that. I remember I was almost 13. I was sent to boarding school, a religious boarding school, and nobody in the boarding school, nobody speak about this. But when we come home, this is the issue. It was like people were shocked. They didn't really expect for this kind response, because the stories and the expectation, the thought was everybody waiting for us. The Israel people not complete, not perfect without us. And everybody here waiting out. So especially for Kesim, spiritual and religious leaders in Ethiopia. So not just for them, it was hard. It was hard for all of us.
Ethiopian rabbi is called a kiss.
Okay. Okay, but it was, I cannot say that there is no struggle and fighting. There is a big demonstration where in 1985, when the thousands of Ethiopian Jews just leave, just stay in the front of Rabbani Parashit, in the front of the office of Rabbani Parashit. I don't know.
The rabbinate.
Because they didn't want to get this decision. To get this decision is to agree that we are not really belonging. It's about this, about our identity, about our main thing. But in the end, they said, okay, he said just giur lechumra. Anyways, it's just, people just left it. And Essim continue to try their work, to support the community. But I can tell, during more than three decades, their position get weaker and weaker because they are not relevant. They are not doing chatuna. They are not doing.
They're not
marrying. No. Yes, I know. Okay.
For
so they don't have any formal position. They just have a position as a kind of a community keeper or community worker, something like that. But they are not as what they were in Ethiopia. And I was very young, and even today, a lot of young Ethiopian Jews try to find their own voice. So there is different solutions. Some of them follow the Orthodox channel, like Orthodox Batim. Some even went to the Shas Haredic channel, but most of them is nothing. They are not follow the, and some is follow Kesim, but most young adult today, they're not, they don't have any, I don't know, in Hebrew even, I don't know. I mean, they don't follow any religious track. This is, I think, one of the biggest crises, and on this crisis, we can put and we can understand also other crises, because the whole idea and thought of the Israeli, not just Rabbanut Rashid, not just them, also other Israeli establishments treat us from the beginning as others, like the whole policies were like that. To decide to send every Ethiopian child and youth to boarding school from the beginning, even though that some of them, a lot of them, came to Israel with their family, the idea was the lifestyle, the life concept, the whole life from Ethiopia is not relevant. And we can re-educate them. We take them. I'm telling now something that for years I do study. I'm in university, and I read protocols, and I read curriculums, and I read letters. So the idea was we can save the kids. We can make the kids more Israeli, because the family is dormit bar. Like we just wait that they will pass this.
The ones that
this
spend
life.
30 years in the desert, they're lost.
Yeah. But Okay, until now I can say, okay, it's not new. But what happened is, they send most of us to very, very weak boarding school, which is no opportunity to social mobility. No opportunity for Bagrut examination. Bagrut examination, it's a very basic thing. In Israel, I guess, everywhere, to go to college, to have tough, professional thing, something. But all of us, I will say something about myself, I am a lucky one. Most of the kids and youth were sent that boarding school. The idea was for them enough to be mechanics, and for them enough to be a metapelet,
like
child care. So very low level work. I'm not saying that every Ethiopian should be a professor. I'm not saying that. But from the beginning, to put most of us in this kind of place, it's telling something about what they expecting from us. So they are expecting from us to be cleaner and to be very low level workers. But as Ethiopians at that time, we were very nice. And we say, okay, you say that? So that, fine. Okay, I guess, myself, I guess you know than me, you know than my father, you know than my mother, because you are local. You live here, you are local. Mm-hmm. Very fast we start to speak about the color. You are white. As a white, you know more than me. Okay? And then we understood the idea of the concept of Western. Okay, you are Western, you know more than me. If you know more than me, I do everything you say. This thing was, and still think that, mafi'il otanu. I don't know.
That's how it moves us.
Yeah. I mean, we act direction of this concept. This is problem. I told you that I'm lucky. I'm lucky because I was one of the 13 girls who was sent to really good boarding school, Ulpana. Ulpana is like a yeshiva. It's very high level of the Tzionut HaDatit.
If the Zionist education, the religious Zionist education was an excellent
school.
Excellent religious Zionist school.
Zionist school. Yeah, I was really lucky. Why I was lucky? Because when I finished my high school, I was a person, everybody in Aliyat Youth Aliyah organization, which is Youth Aliyah organization, is belong to the Sokhnut, and they paid for my study in that boarding school. And the executive director of Aliyat HaNoar heard about Shula Mola. Lama, why he heard about Shula Mola? Because Shula Mola finished a Bagrut examination with very, very, very low level mathematics and English, and that, but it was very rare. It was not very few Ethiopians did it. Even though we were more than 10 years in Israel, 10 and 15 years in Israel, but we were not on the right direction. And I can continue every decision when they decide where to put the newcomers. You can tell, okay, even in 1991, absorption, Mirza Moshe, Operation Solomon. Moses was when, in 1984-5, Operation Solomon, the airlift from Ethiopia, directly from Ethiopia, from Addis Ababa to Israel, in 2 nights, 15,000 Ethiopian Jews left Ethiopia because it was a civil war, yeah, in Ethiopia. And Israel decide what to do. When Israel decide what to do, Israel knows what to do. So at that time, they decide to put caravans in different nowhere places, in between Moshavim, in between Arim. One was, I was a national, I did my national service in Maagalim. Maagalim is a caravan site in, not in, near Moshav Maagalim and Moshav Mabuim and Sderot, nowhere. How we know it was, how I understood it? I understood it later. When I came to be volunteer in IAJ, Israel Association for Ethiopian Jews, and I start to understand nowhere means they couldn't participate for the Bechirot because they don't belong to any municipality. Different, like sometimes you just see that and say, I don't think it's intentional.
It's not intentional.
It's not intentional, probably. But I think it sit on the same concept as, okay, this is Ethiopian camps, and for them enough, anything we give them is enough because they are coming from Ethiopia. Mm-hmm. Anyway, they are not, Bidyuk exactly belong to us, so we have solution. Doesn't matter if it's good solution or bad solution. Nobody really think, okay, we do this bad, no. But nobody really think and say, let's think Beimet. Let's think how we integrate them, how we help them to be part of society. No, they don't. I know. I guess some people is yes, but generally as a mivne erguni, as a organizations, they don't really invest enough mind and leg. Hard to think this. Okay, when you put people somewhere in the desert of Negev, and you can imagine what is the welfare system there, you can imagine what is educational system there, because especially those place before the Ethiopian came there, it's really very problematic place. It's peripheria, yeah? Peripheria?
Peripheral. The periphery.
Thank you, periphery. Okay, I will try. Okay. Thank you. and if there is a good thought, they will say, Lama, why you put challenge? Actually, challenge, yes, we come from Ethiopia. Ethiopia is not the Western country. Yeah, we need a lot of things to earn here, to do here. Those places are not good for us because they are a struggle for themselves. But okay, we stayed there 4 years. Not myself, but I worked 2 years there. For 4 years. 2, 3, 4, 5. Nothing happened. Bet Sefer is really bad. Most of the schools. Very weak. And as I told, the welfare system still very weak because they have a lot of weak people, a lot of poor people. They don't really have to. They couldn't help for another, I don't know, 1,000 people who just came from Ethiopia with problem of traumatic situations, problem of like people lost their family on the world, people. I mean, you know what? Even they are not lost in their family. Even without this thing, to left place like Ethiopia and to be here, it's very traumatic and very dramatic. But people with a little bit mind can understand it. Anyways, they stay for I don't know for long until they find the Misrat Klita absorption office. For some people, they give a public house, and also public house most of the time, not most of the all the time, public house is in very weak neighborhoods in different towns like Kiryat Malachi, Kiryat Gat, or Lod, whatever. After a while, Yair Tzaban was a minister of absorption, and he did really big decision. He said, I want to give a special mortgage for the Ethiopian Olim, and he start this a new policy, and he start he decide the office give the mortgage for the Ethiopians that they can decide where they want to live, not just absorption office will find that public apartment bad place, they can find themselves the place, the house, and they will get like 90% of the mortgage is like a gift, like they don't need to give back. It's really, since that time, nothing like that happened to, not to the Ethiopian, not to others. It was a really good decision. The problem with that was that the community, the two problems. One is the community didn't really had the orientation about the places. So sometimes they got the money and buy at the same place that the absorption office send their family in there 10 years before this policy. What happened is most of the Ethiopians continue to be and to buy very weak neighborhoods in different, most of the time, a weak town or weak neighborhoods in the stronger cities. Then one reason, a lack of orientation. Another reason was problem with the Medinyut, problem with the policy, because they said, okay, if you want to buy a house in Jerusalem, I will give you $90,000. At that time, it was a lot for a house. I will give you, but if you go, if you want to buy in Lod, I give you just 45. Okay. If I have $90,000 for Lod, I will buy in a better shchuna in Lod, better neighborhood in Lod. But with 45 that I got, I can buy in shchunat Ramat Eshkol in Lod, which is very weak shchunot. Something with the medinyut, with the policy, was bad. And the end of that, the bottom line of this was the Ethiopian Jews continue concentrate in the very weak neighborhoods in different towns. And the aspect of the education, as I told, most of them sent to the boarding school where no academic track, just vocational track. And in the for the younger Ethiopians, elementary school. Also, they
concentrate
in very few elementary schools in that towns. What happened is when more and more Ethiopians come to the schools, the non-Ethiopian is, the Americans know that more than me, like white flight. Just leave. And the dynamic of this was a lot of Ethiopians, the stereotype and prejudice about the Ethiopian make that school very weak, because the teachers didn't really expect higher from the kids. Most of the time, the teachers well and are still very nice, very warm, very like, they give us hug, I say always. But they didn't expect us to be something more than what I just told you at the beginning of my talk. Okay? Very nice. No expectation. That's why when some Ethiopian kid does something good academically, like what I did when I was, he's very famous because he's Ethiopian. We're not really expect them. We expect if they do good Hebrew, they understand Hebrew, they can write and read, and they know they have the orientation. It's enough. Yeah, yeah. Haikar, my teacher in the Ultana, she said, Haikar shetivni bayit yehudi tov. זה לא משנה אם אני מקבלת 65 בספרות ואני בוכה 65. I got in literacy lessons 65 and I did really my best. It was very very hard and I stopped crying because I want to 85. I want to teach him like 85, 90, like Edith, my friend. We did really. I put my foot there and the teacher said, no mishane, it doesn't matter. The greatest, I can, you will build a good Jewish house. What does that mean? Ma? Bemet. No, I feel it inside, I couldn't say that. I couldn't. So there is a lot of like this people, and she's nice. She's really nice. Bemet.
Like she doesn't beat you or something.
No, she's Bennett. No, I'm honestly, she's... No, Bennett. But she just saw me, and she understood that I'm coming from Ethiopia, and she had that idea, so that means, whoa, but him, she was 6 feet over center, and it's enough. And this attitude continued until today. Continue until today, and I have very new example with my daughter. I have 4 kids. I told you that? I have 4 kids. Yeah. I have my youngest and my oldest is 18. She's going to the army next month. And my second, she's her name is Noam, she's 16. And last year, she's good. She's good in English. She speaks English fluently. not for me, yeah? Just from the YouTube. No, she's smart. She's smart. Bemet, she's smart. And she went to her mechanech.
Her teacher.
Yeah, like the main teacher. And told him that she wants to move to the English speakers class. And she talked about that for like few months already, and I tried to check like from my English level, I checked if she's there, and I understood that she's really good enough and she reads in English. And then I encouraged her to go to the teacher, and she went to the teacher, and the teacher said, he said in Hebrew, "Ani va'at lo mihaedah matima." Ani va'at, you and me, not coming from the right ethnic group. Like he said, and she came to home and said, "Akadamu," and she said, "Ima, do you know what Amir said, Ma?" Amir, you're really crazy. You're stupid. And she's very strong. And she just got it in the minute. She left him on. And then I asked her what she'd say. Yeah, I didn't say any word. I just left the meeting. She just left the meeting. So what? He doesn't know her. I mean, I would expect from him to ask questions just to understand what is her motivation? Why she think she can join into the English speakers class? But he didn't. Stupid. There, this kind of, and I told him that he's, I didn't say stupid, but I say, you did big mistake. I have no responsibility between you. Now she will kill you. Which true. You can imagine, Amir, don't tell, okay? The teacher, we're friends, and he knows us, and we have really good relationship, and he knows that I'm not the Ethiopian who live in the caravan, and he knows that I'm not the Ethiopian who live in Yitzhak Sadeh, in the weak neighborhood. I live in Baka, and he knows I'm doing my PhD. And he knows that Noam's father, his therapist, he knows. Even though he did this mistake. And you can imagine, but I know, because I involved thousands of times, teachers just push down those kids. And I want to tell you a few words about my research. I did my research a few years ago among the Ethiopian youth in five different schools. And I tried to understand how they manage the phenomenon of racism, what they do with that, how they deal with that. And my findings showed that these kids, every day, every day, every time, I guess every moment, they do to convince the adult, the teachers, the people, the peers, the friends, that they are regular. Anachnu regilim, anachnu normal, we are normal. We are not Ethiopian. We are normal. And every day they do the different practical actions, like to show how they're normal. One of the things is, I speak about three aspects of being normal, being regular. One is Jewishness, like they start to speak about their Jewish style like the other's Jewish style. I'm speaking about the religious school, five religious school. So even we didn't practice something in Ethiopia, they start to tell that we did this in Ethiopia. In Ethiopia we did exactly like that. In Ethiopia we light the candle, the Erev Shabbat. No, we didn't. We had no this custom. Yeah, you can say that? Okay? Or they speak, one of the kids say, the Ethiopia, we did bar mitzvah. No, we didn't do bar mitzvah like that. We didn't bar mitzvah in the weird thing, like it's different thing. But they have no confidence that they can bring themselves as the Ethiopian Jews among the other among the dominants. So they start to do things like to hide the weird things and to tell, to emphasize the things that it's the same, or even to say, to tell different things, which didn't happen. Okay. Okay, I'm there, almost there. So, what I want you to get from this talk is the everyday struggle that the kids and the adult doing just to be integrated, like to be normal. And unfortunately, it's very hard to pass. Very hard to be like others. Because even though that my daughter is like very normal, if she would not black, this teacher, I guess, would not say what he said. It's easy, it's soft, mm-hmm. It's not hard. But I'm using that just to show you how things happen. It's hard for us to pass. And I always think what to do and what I decide to do is different thing. One is to educate people, to educate white and black people about this situation, about everyday a little thing that's creating this weird place, like divide between us, just to know the prejudice of ourselves. The little racist, a little guy in our life, in our inside, just to know that. And especially as educators have to have reflection every mifgash, every encounter. They have to do the encounter and watch the encounter they do. This is I'm working in an organization called MATACH, Merkaz LeTechnologia Chinuchi. It's a big organization. I'm working in the special department called coexistence and civic study. So I have a lot of freedom to do what I want to do with teachers. I work hard with teachers. The other thing is I'm doing political work. Like I say, to my colleagues, to my kids, to others, hey, you have to don't say the white person know more than me. Don't say the local person know than me. No. We belong here. We are ownership of this land. We are ownership for this state. We are ownership on this country. I'm not saying that like that. I'm doing work. Every Wednesday, myself and the other three friends, women, we go to the neighborhood in Rishon LeZion. We just work with the youth about this material, about this thing, to say, hey, we are here. It's ours. It's our home.
Kohen to this day cannot marry an Ethiopian Jew because they have to convert, and Kohens can't marry converts. So what is the overall feeling of Ethiopians toward the rabbinate? Do they hate all the rabbinate? Do they like some Sephardi rabbis? What is the overall feel? Because I know this question still comes up.
Ken. Something good happened, I think. I would say last, even not 10 years, probably 5 years, and strongly since 2015, there was a big demonstration of the most of them young Ethiopians who came to Israel when they were young, very young, or born here. After, like what I told you, after their hard work to be a regular, to be like others, they realize that they are not, they cannot pass. And these people, this young adult, just decide to protest, to fight back actually. And the reason was, it was one tiny story. When the Ethiopian Israeli soldier, Ethiopian origin, were beat by shotrim, by police, even in Hebrew I cannot say that. Just stunned.
Unprovoked.
Just stunned. He was there when it was Chefetz Chashud. They found some. They
suspicious
don't.
Object.
Yes, they don't. So they start walking. He just passed through that place, and they say to him something that I don't know what. And he didn't stop and just catch him and beat him. And somebody just take a picture. And now with the new media, it was in few minutes. Every Ethiopian citizen here just know about this story, and somebody or some of them say, "Okay, enough is enough. Enough is enough," because a lot of young Ethiopian had this bad experience with the encounter with the shooting, with the police. It was more than 15,000 Ethiopians during 2 weeks. Not always 15,000, but a lot of Ethiopians just say, "We don't want this life, and we don't want to be here like that." And I think this situation was a kind of a turning point for the community, not just for the young, not just for the adult, for every Ethiopian, even though I think until that time and a little bit before, especially Ethiopian adult people say, "Rega, things it will be better. Will be enough time here. Will be good. We'll do better." And God, yeah, always God can help. Savlanut. But in those days, there is a common, I think, idea that we have to fight for our place, for our belonging, for our ownership for this place. So as what happened is, I'm coming back to your question, there is a lot of groups set up, and this group start to discuss about the our traditional resources, start to speak about our relationship as a community with the Rabbanut, especially Rabbanut Ashkenazi, and not just saying Sheyamutu kol Rabbanim. Also happen, like, we don't want them, we are not part of them. And pray that the whole Rabbanut will be die. No, not that mess. Yamuto, you can hear that. No, just speak about the thing. We are speaking about the narratives. We are speaking about how there is a big bilicha, a big joke in the community. Manyan, they think that Moshe Rabbeinu look like Sash cannot speak in that. Nyan, yen.
Interesting.
Yeah, yen. We, the Ethiopians, very, very close to the origin of Israel. Not these people who look like not local and who dress not as a local, what they want from us. So it's kind of, I say, as an educator, for the beginning, it's good. Okay, be here, in this place that where you are doing this bad, I'm good, I'm Jewish, they're not, no? It's kind of we are doing what they did, but it's good for to start here and continue just understanding that to be Jewish, we don't need to go back to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. This is different. This is diverse people who come from different places. No group. There is no intermarriage, intercontinental, I don't know, whatever. So we are here. We practice Judaism in Ethiopia for years. We have traditional Jewish tradition. Sorry, Indy.
We have a Jewish tradition.
Jewish tradition. And we believe, and we practice, and we are here, so we are Jewish. We don't need that the Rabbanut will give us permission. You know what I mean? So there is a big siach, a big discourse of narratives. And people speak a lot, narrative, it's a very popular word. People speak about narratives, it's about narratives. And we can retain our narratives. We can notzimi foshakavarnu our story.
We can unbury our story.
Okay? Because during more than three decades, we just did what my interviewer did. We just hide our tradition, our Jewishness. So now kind of people just bring it and speak about that. And I hope we will find a common discourse, we can find and build a common story to be here as a shutafim, partners in this country, in this land. Actually, we're speaking about the land, not just state or.
I just wanted to hear about the schools that you looked at for your PhD. What kind of schools are they, and what have you found to be the same or different between them?
There is different between them. Different of.
Shades of religion.
Yeah, some two were Ulpana. Ulpana is just like, I think, a stronger. I'm speaking about Orthodox schools, so like more Orthodox, a little lighter Orthodox. So two boys' schools of Reshet Amit. Yes, but it's not the mainstream. Which is the kids who studied there, not just the Ethiopian kids. The others come from weaker families, and most of them there is correlation. Most of them Mizrahim, okay. North African family, like North African who came in the 50s and 60s, but still you can see the position, the economic and social position of this North African. Most of the people like that, almost the kids and the Ethiopians. Yeah, it's virtual, the Ethiopian kids meet, I would say, the kishalon chevrati של הקליטה בשנות החמישים. This is where we live, this is where we study, we meet them, we don't meet them.
They meet those people that came in the 50s and they were also failed to integrate properly, and this is where Ethiopians.
But the bottom line, I tried to say it before, is those kids and those kids, the kids who study in Ulpeno, and the kids who study in this week schools, they have the same desire. They just want to be like others, like a dominant, like a Lebanese, like a white. They don't know the difference between. They don't have their concept. They don't have Mizrahim Ashkenazim. They don't have that.
Yeah. Shall I think anything about Anitim being in orange?
Again?
Anitim being in orange, I was just curious, like where you see the youth village, and
yeah, being old is the good example, the only example, only the good place in youth area is in
the world. It's the only one.
The only one. Any. Only one. Because it's happened because of the high pay.
But don't you think the concept of isolating, like no.
It's bad. It's bad to take kids from their family. It's in this aspect, I mean, also bad. But when I see like 25 different youth alien village, I mean, most of them very weak. Most of them are place for kids with problems, broken house.
But also you made a word have.
Sarah, I'm going to ask.
Is there like a dynamic between Ethiopian Jews who have come here and people from Eritrea and Sudan and Ethiopia who aren't Jews, and like difficulty of people who are Ethiopian Jews wanting to distinguish themselves as Jews and distance themselves from people who aren't as like fully belonging here, that sort of thing?
Yeah, you did your you make the point. Most of the Ethiopian Jews they have really hard behavior against the Sudanese and the Eritreans, because what just said, they want to be separate from them. We are Jews, and we want to be part of the Jewish collective. And also, we have a harder time because of them. Because today it's hard to go around in Drom Tel Aviv, in the south of Tel Aviv, because the police can think of me as Eritrean or Sudanese, and they most of the times it just happened, they just catch me and ask me for the Tudazhut, for the ID, and they say it's happened because of the Sudanese and Eritrean. Yeah, it's true, but so okay, yeah, so no solidarity between, I say most, not all, but most people, you know, even my colleagues, they say it's bad that they are here. Yeah.
Okay.
What are some of the Jewish customs that were done in Ethiopia that are similar or different than what was done with other communities? Jewish customs tradition. Some examples.
I will give you two big things, probably three. One is the whole thing of Nida, Tumah v'Tahara.
Family purity laws.
Family
Family purity laws. Don't bother with it. Family purity laws.
Okay, Mashayama, what did you say? In Ethiopia, it's very, very, very strong thing. In Ethiopia, when a woman getting her period, she go out from the community for 8 days. After 8 days, she go to the river to clean herself, and there is some ritual that is the ritual, spiritual manhig, leader does, and she can like join to the community. It's big thing. When she gives birth, if it's a boy, 40 days, if a daughter, 80 days, she just separate from the community, community serve her, and after that time, she, again, it's a big, big thing. When we come here, there's a big, big crisis. I have a big crisis in Ulpana. I got my period, after 2 years, I got to the Ulpana. During these years, I was like,
petrified. You were afraid.
I was afraid. If I get my period, what he do? Because no place for this. Mm-hmm. And it's big deal. I was fear from, like, afraid. And I always say, probably that's why I got my period, just when I was 15. Like, I didn't know what to do. So after I got my period, the teacher said, okay, come to the Bet Knesset. Bet Knesset, Ribbono Olamim. Bet Knesset? It was big, big, big problem in different absorption centers, caravan sites, problem. They wanted a different house for them, and the absorption authorities say, no, what's that? It's one thing. Another thing is about the kashrut, basar halal. In Ethiopia, the understanding of al tevashel gidi bechalev imo is completely
don't
different.
Boil a cow in your brother's milk, right?
It's completely different. Their understanding is don't eat the cow or the sheep when they are little, during they having their mother's milk. כל עוד הם שותים מהחלב שלהם, אתה לא אוכל אותם. זה היה, וואו. שבת, also. It's funny. I was in boarding school, and I learned, you already know, I thought that what Rav Klein, my rabbi, said is kadosh, it's true, right? And I learned that Ulpana, that we can have a plata for Shabbat. Plata, to eat. Yeah, we can. In Ulpana, we eat hot food. And I came home and I say to my mother, sure, we can buy this. I know the name in Hebrew, even plata. Let's go to buy. What for we buy this thing? To eat the food for Shabbat. To eat hot food Shabbat? Okay. They make you crazy. now I can laugh, but at that time, it's just in between. So, what's true? And I didn't say, okay, shtuyot. Okay, I don't have hot food, it's nothing. Okay, beside, fine. But my attitude was like everything Ralph Klein and other teachers said is real, truth, and they know, like they have really a very straight connection with Elohim. And what my mother said is, mamash, a son. You can imagine like the place that we as the kids and youth were at that time.
Get back to Lula. I'm sorry, Lula. Thank you for waiting.
So I guess I'm interested in hearing you speak about speaking about prejudice, racism, in dialogue with people who Ashkenazi Jews, basically, because, so for instance, I've had my own experiences here where I know that the interaction has to do with what I look like,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And a lot of times I've received feedback of, oh, well, Israelis are like that with everybody. And I guess I would really just like for you to maybe help me to be able to speak in a way or like convey that no, it's not really that way with everybody, and that there really is a difference. There is a racism that is persistent and existing now, and it's really not that way. But I think sometimes I think part of the assimilation thing is, you know. And also learning how to have that dialogue where sometimes I'm pissed. Do you know, like, pissed, angry. I'm angry. And, you know, like, I'm angry and I want to be angry. But I also want to speak to, you know, in a way that can convey that it's real and it's not made up, you know? So...
Can you
give examples of how you do that?
And now I'm very popular speaker among the Israelis, because they don't. I'm doing a generalization. It's a word. Good, Shula. I found. When you speak statistically, like say, happened this for Ethiopians, happened this, you did that, and then they give you the opposite facts and to show you that you are wrong. And what I'm doing is not just when they invite me to speak, also in my work in Matah that I just mentioned before, I start from the experience. And they say, I'm now speaking about experience. It doesn't matter if Amir did it by mistake. It doesn't matter. Said it. For example, sometimes I start to speak about my experience from one class. As a teacher, I want to do a course, a teacher, she didn't know me at the beginning of the course. I was a little bit late, and during their lesson, she just asked me a question, Hevant? Two times she asked others, Beseder, Hevantem? And she asked me like 10 times. And in the end, she came to me when others do some workshop. She came to me and see if I was following the lesson. Okay, I tell that. When in the beginning, I tell with the anger, and then it's not good. I just today, what I do with this story, for example, say this happened, and then I tell honestly how I felt. How when after three times she asked Hevant, how I start to feel, and I lost her. In the beginning, I was follow the class. I was follow what she was saying. But once I understood that she think I probably don't understand, and she think that because my color, because my body, and then I couldn't control my anger. They met, and they say, okay, I start to think what to tell to her, what to do with her, na. And they say, okay, I know, she's good person, they met. She does this because she wants to help me. But why she wants to help me? Because she think I probably don't understand. Why she think I don't know? Because I'm Ethiopian. And then, like, you go this way and speak about the prejudice that teachers keeping in their rosh, in their heart, and come to the encounter with their little kid. A little kid who born here in Israel. And probably... his family did university, but this new teacher low level. He's weak. And then, I mean, I'm coming from the feeling, from the experience, a real experience. Otherwise, and from that, it's easier for me to show the statistics, the social structure. What the percentage of the Mizrahim in the university? Statistics, 16%. Why is just 16% of the Mizrahim in the university? Because this a little thing happened on our world. This a little thing, and sometimes not because the person is bad, because the person has no reflection to see how he acts, how she acts. But most people who does a racist action, they even don't know, and I say, I have to help them. Because everybody wants to be a good teacher. Everybody wants to do a good thing in this place, Nahon? And everybody wants, don't make others feel bad, Nahon? No, nobody really wants me to feel what I felt when I have this experience, Nahon? So I say, this is how I go out from my home. I say, most people want to do good thing. And I'm here to help them. I also expect others to help me. I have, if you invite me again, I can show you how I do this, some of the things I just speak about. We're people, we're a person. And we need, it's, you are educators, it's about reflection. It's about watching ourselves doing things. And to be honest, to watch and say, oh, I have to do things differently. Now, anger is good. It's good because push us to do things. And sometimes it's just... So if you can put it here and do... And sometimes you can... It depends. I don't know. I mean...
Mish? Oh, no, now it's free reign. You decide.
Okay. Are you willing to address the birth control issue?
Mm-hmm. Tell the birth control issue.
Yeah.
What, do you know what she's talking about? The dipo, per, the theory, the...
Is it birth control?
Birth control, Wait, so you have to explain what happened. Only Shoshana knows what she's talking about.
No, nobody.
The incident. Explain the incident.
What happened is there is a non-written policy to help the Ethiopian women not give too much birth.
No. They give what it's the standard was. I don't think it is still now, right? But
yeah,
in the 90s, it is still now.
Can.
To get, instead of prescribing birth control pills, to encourage birth control and to give it by shot, so that women don't have to. Ethiopian women can't remember.
That, then all you know is that you and all your friends are not having children.
It's you know. How we know that, ma?
They didn't know.
They didn't know. No. They tell them in Ethiopia, in the compound in Ethiopia, and here they tell them that in Israel a lot of kids is bad, lot of no kids.
Who's they?
They is school people, JDC people, government people. It's something that is a kind of a connection. I don't think they sit together. It's a good example. Nobody sit together and decide. But it's a nature of structure. Is just everybody who belong that organizations understand that it's not good to have a lot of Ethiopians. So everybody who meet this woman just helps them to understand not good a lot of kids, not good. lot of kids. You don't have ability. You don't have money. You don't have education. Your kids will be in a scam, will be a poor kid. So they convince them in different manipulations to stop the birth. We know that because in Pardes-Katz, it's one place near the Ramat Gan, there is one time no kids for Kita Aleph, no kids for Gan. What happened? No kids for Gan? What happened? We have kids for Kita Bet, Kita Gimel, Kita Dalet. What happened? It was the thing that people start to ask questions, and then they understood. The women that place and different women, different places, just having for years this Zrikan.
Shot. Injection.
I think it's a kind of a radical side of racism. A lot of things I can tell, it's kind of like that. Yes, mistake, we can tell different names. This thing, like to decide who has a right to give birth, and who is not, this is, I don't have any words, like, then, that's it.
So, thank you so much for coming through to us. I wanted to know if you see any parallels between, or draw inspiration from the American civil rights movement in the 60s and modern day today. In your fight as an activist? Are you seeing similarities between the problems in America and Israel?
There is some common things. I mean, to fight for rights, to be like marginalized because of my color is the same thing. But I think there is a big difference because we decide to come. We come to our Eretz, we come to our Jerusalem, and we are here because we want to be here. I think it's big emotionally, it's a big thing. That's why I try to keep it inside of us. We are here because we want to be here. We are here because this is our place. Also, the whole experience of African-American, I know that from reading, is so, you know what? America is a disgusting place. They met, really. And I follow today, I know what happened. And they say they are stupid not just to finish with that. To do everything, to invest everything, and to just finish this shame and embarrassing, bad, brutal situation and behavior. Behemet. So there is, you can feel the common things. I learn myself a lot from the process, but I always tell myself it's different. Yeah.
Amanda?
Oh, I just wanted a clarification about the going back to the birth control.
That?
Yeah.
Slowly.
Oh, slowly. So did they actually have like interventions in which they gave shots to people, like general practitioners, or what did that look like?
It's very hard to follow after that, because you meet the doctor, you as Ethiopian woman meet the doctor, and the doctor tell you what to take and what to do. So it's happened, we know it's happened, but now they already understood as a policy, as a norm, it's not good, but it's happened. Also, there is different way how this birth control works. When Ethiopian woman give birth in Hadassah or in whatever, every birth, the doctor will ask you,
Imatrotza, do you want birth
control?
Wow.
Do you want
today?
To be sterilized now?
Again, it's happened to me 3 times. Lama, only one son, Lama.
Who do you tie your tubes? That's
translated
in English.
The old time I give birth, I have 4. Ah, I didn't agree. So I have 4. It's happened. You have to fight for your right. It's not, it's secret. It's just happened. Does every doctor understand that she or he should to ask? And every doctor understand that very hard for Ethiopian family to economically to exist. So Opa, how she grow him?
Raise a fourth child.
Raise him. Okay. Sometimes it's decided for us. Yeah? Mushroom. Yeah. It's happened.
They can do it against your will? They can.
They don't force it.
They ask.
They ask.
They explain. They convince. They force a little bit. Yeah.
Wow,
yeah. If you know, it's about awareness. If you know that, as a woman, if you know that, you just understand it. That's it. No. You say no. But if you say, maybe she's right. Maybe it's happening. Yeah.
Is it specifically after you give birth? Because there's such a difference if you were asked before birth.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, is it education before you have birth, or is it right after you give birth, the doctor says, oh, would you like...
For next one.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's
enough.
Okay.
Shine is enough.
Okay.
So do you want this and this? So, you know what? Well, after my second girl... I didn't want. Behemet, I didn't want. I almost say can. Almost. And then my husband said, Mada hoof. Okay, take a time. You don't need now to answer this question. And after a while, he told me, why did they ask? I mean, he is, sometimes he's smarter. Actually, most of the time. It's very like Adin. Things very like Adin. Loda. Like, that's clear. It's not clear. Yeah.
How did you meet your husband?
My smart husband. We know each other for years. And how am I chazer?
He was. How do you say dating? Not dating. Yeah, we do. Courting. Courting.
Courting?
Yeah.
No.
Courting.
They don't like my English. Flirting. Okay, flirting. They want flirting.
18th
century.
I've
used that word.
I'm too old.
So what?
So much better.
He was really a good mechazer for years. And but I said, not too quiet. He's not tall also. And then after 2 years. We had opportunity to spend time together with IHS activity. I did IHS activity, the organization I belong to, and he came and he was very smart. He speaks very nicely. He's so smart. He's so gentle, And then, after we finished their activities, I said, do you remember you wanted to drink with me a coffee?
Respectable.
Can I ask the statistics for the Ethiopian community, specifically young men in jail, is so terrible. And the on the one hand, I would like you to talk to, and there's this other thing, which is the Israeli government has so many, it seems like they came from only good intentions, and they spent tons of money, like they really tried, they spent a lot of money. Tell us how they could, what they could have done better, besides for expectation, you know, like you're saying everything's good intentioned and by accident. What?
No, I mean, there is a big kind of talk and discourse of there is a lot of money, they invest a lot of money on this community, and payment, no. There is a lot of talk, a lot of itaskut with this. They speak about it, they kind of, it's the sound, they care about the community. In the end, they didn't do, in different phases of the project, they didn't do a mushroom, mashmouti shinui.
They didn't do serious change, meaningful change.
They keep themselves as a coordinator of this. For example, until last year, all the Ethiopians who live in Israel were under the control of Misrad HaKlita.
The absorption ministry. Even
the
though they
meaning
were
of this is everyone, including my kids. I told you already, my kids very, very Israeli. Not very good Israeli. Bayman. They don't need any special attention. Even my kids under that control. Okay? Even though they don't put any money. And the message of this was to everybody, we are special. Not in the good word, we are special. We are Olim, always Olim. Even though they born here, even though they study in Technion or university, they are Olim. Something wrong with you, something is not normal. When I did my research, the most thing, the common thing among the 40 kids I interviewed was, we had, when the teacher take us out from the class, why they take out them from the class? Because they got project for Ethiopians.
You hate that.
They hate that. They don't like that. Because it gives them like a sign, like they are not a normal.
A stigma.
So they give money to the organization, like Misrad HaKlita, like JDC, like Sohnut. This organization, what they do, they collect us together, they gather us, and they give us projects. Sometimes they can start a good way, the project is slowly, this project's really bad. The dynamic is, just like I mentioned before, is very low level. In the end, they say, when they do evaluation, for example, in the evaluation they say, the bottom line is, the Beseder, because we have to remember from where these people came. We have to remember where these people live. Beseder, I know I live in Katamonim, Bamakom, I know. The question is, what you can do in order to like take me out from that. Not to explain why I'm leaving and I'm staying there. Not help me to stay there. You give more money to change that. Mostly it doesn't happen because the money is for the organizations most of the time. The money is to keep the social worker, the teacher, the coordinator, the different names that I don't know how to say it in English. Not really move the community from this place to other place. Sometimes it's happened. We have Ishland, we have Ethiopian, she's a teacher.
Ethiopian?
Yeah, Ethiopian. No, it's not normal. We should to see if they good, if they do good thing, we should see everywhere, not as a cleaner, like it's happened, everywhere Ethiopia, as a teacher, as a lawyer, as a lecturer, no? No, it doesn't happen, not yet, not yet. This is our challenge. And about the jail, yeah. We had a family, Ben Mishpacha.
Relative.
Relative. For a year in our house. We took him from Ofek.
You adopted a child.
He stayed with us.
Foster.
Yeah, and I said, how this happens? Mishpacha him. Smart, really smart. Smarter than my kids, understand? just his kid. And I hear his story, and they say the present that different things could happen. Not the aspect of the teachers and social workers, also family. Family. I told you before, every Wednesday, we go to the Holloway. Wednesday? What's the name?
Wednesday.
Okay. We go to the very difficult neighborhood in Rishon LeZion, and I see the kids who has the potential to go to the Ofek jail, and I see the kid who was in Ofek jail, and we meet the parents, and there is a lot of things to do with parents. The parents, I mentioned before, sometimes if the teacher says something, she knows. No, she doesn't know. They just give up. They give up. Okay, kids did this. The police catch the kid. I guess he did something bad, the kid. Asma, he did something bad. You have to be there, even though he did something bad. If you don't go there, he just will finish in the jail of fate. So we have a lot of work to do inside the community, just to say, take back your responsibility. Nobody help your kid if you are not there. This is what we did. My husband is really, Behemet, he's really good. Behemet. We did together this work with the family, with the parents of the kid. We just tried to work together, to do the story together, to say, we don't know the whole solutions, they might know, but we first of all, it's your kids, doesn't matter what he did. Okay, stay there, don't give up. And a lot of families just give up. They don't know what to do. They think they know, she knows more than me, she knows more than me. No, she doesn't know. So.
I feel like we should finish. We've gone way over, but I would love for you to tell us something uplifting. And what you've told us all the things that went wrong. Give us the vision for what could go right. How would we fix it all?
A lot of things I already said, Behemet. As a community, we have to take responsibility for our lives. I'm not saying give up, not getting from the government, from the school what they need to give us, not saying not have the service, but we have to be a leader of what we want to do, where we want to go, and demand. Take the responsibility and demand what you need to do. This is about the community. Also, I really believe about dealing with the stories, with the tradition, with the narratives, with the strong side. We have to kind of refix or retell our story. We don't know our story. We don't need that others, other anthropologists or other, I don't know, non-Ethiopian who will tell our story. Sometimes it's not correct or it's not okay. They can continue to to give their perspective, but we have to create our own perspective and to be open to learn about ourselves
in a critical way.
Yeah, we have to do this. And I involve in different initiatives in this aspect. I am a chair of the Association for Ethiopian Jews. We are doing a louder work. We are fighting, no shame, no shy. We just say, you are racist. I'm part of this. So I have different kind of kovaim or glimot. I'm fighting when I should to scream. I do this, and we need to do that. I also, I'm educator, I'm doing process. I'm working with different organizations, non-Ethiopian organizations, who deal with the same problems, like different Mizrahim organizations that working about the same social problems. I'm working with Arab organizations who did. I myself am working with Arab Jewish teachers. So I see where I can work together. I work together where it's our own. It's very flexible. I think I believe that to see where is my interest as not just as a person, as a community leader. So it's a different thing. I really believe, Bennett, this is you can say this is a strategic. Probably I really believe that people, when they know that they do bad things, when they know their mistake, they want to change it. They want to fix it. So I want to be there. I want to have dialogue with people. Yeah? So, and I want to be normal. I want to be, raise my kids as a normal. I want my kids to go around not afraid that shoter catch them and point them. It's very, very personal thing.
Thank you so much, Shula. This was just wonderful. Really appreciate it.
This is a production of the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies. For more original Torah content, visit elmad.pardes.org.